are listening to the Long Shadow Leadership Series, showcasing leaders casting a long shadow with in-depth interviews that will show you how to cast your own long shadow and change the culture in your organization. This series is made possible by Advantage Leadership, enabling you to improve bottom and top line results, executing robust strategic plans, and developing strategic leaders and managers. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Rebecca Staten-Reinstein.
Good morning and welcome back to Season 2 of our Long Shadow Leadership Series, showcasing leaders casting a long shadow and changing their culture forever. I'm your host, Todd Schnick, joined by my friend and colleague, Rebecca Staten-Reinstein. Hello, my friend. I'm excited about Season 2.
Yes, I am too, Todd. Thanks so much. It's going to be a great one.
Well, you certainly scored a really great interview to kick off Season 2. But before we introduce today's guest, real quickly, explain to the audience why long shadow leadership is so important.
Todd, from the time I had my first job as a lifeguard at the local Y, I noticed some places were great to work and others were really horrible. I had some supportive bosses who really helped me grow, and then I had others that seemed determined to bring me down. When I did my PhD research on a grassroots organization, I realized the founder still had a real grip on how people operated day to day, even though she was no longer there. And I realized that a strong leader influences the very infrastructure by creating a culture that permeates every aspect of the company. Larry Sinn coined the phrase shadow the leader to describe this phenomenon. And this long shadow leadership series is part of my ongoing research on the way leaders build culture. Because I love history, my books weave in the stories of historical leaders with those of modern ones to show how leaders build those positive cultures.
All right. Well, it's going to be a great season. I'm looking forward to it. Let's get right to it. Say hello to our guest today. His name is Dr. Larry Sinn. He's the chairman of Sinn Delaney. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Thanks for carving out some very valuable time to join us. Before we get into our conversation, take a few quick seconds, inform the audience a bit about you and your background, and then tell us a little bit about Sinn Delaney.
Sure. Well, Sinn Delaney is the culture-shaping firm. We invented the industry back in the 70s, and it's been a passion of mine for almost 50 years. And much like Rebecca's story, a kid named Jim Delaney and I started an early day more of a traditional consulting firm, but then noticed that it was very easy to get things done in some companies and almost impossible in others. It seemed like companies like people had personalities, and most companies had some elements of a dysfunctional family in them. I think my epiphany came when I was doing some work at Walmart with Sam, creating their first initial supply chain. And this shadow cast there was just incredible. The energy, the creativity. You give them an idea, they'd run out the door and implement it. It was amazing. At the same time, I was trying to work at Woolworth, and going to New York to Woolworth was like going to the morgue, it seemed. They're just a bunch of old guys sitting around a table trying to, their only purpose was to maintain the status quo, whereas Sam had this vision of bringing low-cost goods to rural America. And that got my attention because I concluded that there was something they hadn't taught me in school. So I found a professor at USC, I'd gone to UCLA, who'd put together a little booklet called Readings in Organizational Character. And it just described the phenomenon. And I went to him and I said, I have to understand this to help my clients. And he says, well, everybody knows it's there. No one's ever studied it. What if we paid your way through the doctoral program? And that began the journey, doing field studies of organizations. And the central finding, to Rebecca's point, of my dissertation was that over time, organizations tend to become shadows of their leaders. So what that's led to is our work with CEOs. So we believe we really can't shape a culture unless we begin with the CEO and senior team. And to date, we've worked with 115 Fortune 500 CEOs on culture shaping from top to bottom in their organizations and in 50 countries around the world. So it's been quite a journey.
Larry, you talked a little bit about this and how you got interested in the way leaders affect culture. And of course, you did your dissertation work on it. But I don't think it was really purely an academic interest. Can you expand on that a little more?
No, what I really saw was that in organizations, there were habits and tendencies going on that really created a poor quality of life for people, poor performance, or just this untapped potential. My vision was, well, what if you really could create a truly healthy organization that both had better performance, but also was a better place to work, a better place for customers. And so that really was what drove me back then. And as we've pursued that notion, I've come to the conclusion that what we really are doing is trying to help people live life and work at their best. I think there are all times for each of us when we're really top of our game. We're on a team that really is purposeful and collaborative and trusting and creative. It's a wonderful experience to have. And I think that's our kind of innate behaviors. They're inborn. But over time, we develop these habits. And so organizations have habits of people blaming one another, of trust issues, of turf issues, of people making excuses. So it's really, how do you really get people back to, and organizations back to, the top of their game?
Larry, I've heard you say that all organizations have cultures. The only question is, does it shape you or do you shape it? That really opened my mind, because I realized that a lot of organizations, it will make the point to say, all right, I have to do some very purposeful work to improve my culture. But I fear that they think if they haven't done that, then they say, well, then there's no culture because I've not really focused on it. But in fact, that's their culture. Talk more about that.
Yes, every organization of any kind, from a church to a business, anything, does have a set of characteristics that develop over time. And when people come into that organization, they are suddenly trained to be that way. So if we work late in this company, then I learn to work late. If we blame others in this company, I learn to blame others. If we make excuses, then I learn to make excuses. So it's an interesting thing that people get, in fact, enculturated into whatever historic habits. When we talk about culture, it's the way we do things around here. It's the habits of the organization. But you can also see it in terms of other dimensions, like the energy of the organization. What I noticed most early on was that Sam at Walmart had incredible positive energy, whereas Woolworth had very little energy. So there are other dimensions you can see of organizations, and you can feel it when you walk in. We have a client, Victoria's Secret, part of L Brands, Limited Brands. And you walk in their lobby, and you want to start dancing. You can just feel it. They've got a Starbucks there. People are bustling around and happy, and it's amazing how palpable that energy is.
You know, to expand on that, Larry, as you've worked with all these companies and you've mentioned several items, what do you see as the biggest challenges, the hardest things to overcome when you're trying to change a culture, or once you've got it going, a new initiative, how do you sustain it? What are some of the things that stand in your way?
It's an interesting question, because as a young man, when I finished my dissertation, the essential question I faced is one you just posed, and that is, how do you change habits of adults? Because we're really talking about habits of people. And you know how changing habits is not easy, whether it's weight or anything we do. Our eating habits, they're pretty well ingrained in us. So the question was, how do you change these habits? And that's the most difficult thing, because most people don't have powerful enough processes to do that. They will define a set of values and put them on the wall. Actually, Enron had a great set of values on the wall, but they somehow didn't get them in the heart and soul of people. And so I was really influenced by an early social scientist, a man named Kurt Lewin. And he had a couple of things he postulated. One was, he said, when we are young, we're like a flowing river, and then we freeze. And his theory was, unless people had some kind of a epiphany, some kind of an aha or wake-up call, that it was unlikely to get a significant shift in behavior in a short period of time. Now, we all know this. We meet someone who had very bad habits, ate too many hamburgers, didn't exercise, and they have a heart attack, and all of a sudden they're walking and eating right. That's an epiphany. So what we decided to do is to engineer, in a positive sense, epiphanies, aha moments for people around collaboration, around accountability, around innovation and change. So that's the secret sauce, I think, of the work we do, is waking people up. Now, if you reinforce that through the organization, through communications, through supervisors, through coaching and all, then you can create new habits in organizations. And that's all culture shaping is about, is changing habits of organizations and people.
All right. Dr. Larry Sen will return after this quick break. We'll be right back.
People know leadership and creating a culture are critical factors for a successful organization. Not every executive can bring these factors to life. Dr. Rebecca Staten-Reinstein, president of Advantage Leadership, works with companies from around the world who want to engage employees and delight customers to guarantee bottom-line success. She has already documented the winning formula for strategic leadership in Success Planning, a how-to guide for strategic planning, and Conventional Wisdom, How Today's Leaders Plan, Perform, and Progress Like the Founding Fathers. To learn more, visit AdvantageLeadership.com. That's AdvantageLeadership.com.
All right, we're back with Dr. Larry Sen, chairman of Sen Delaney.
Larry, I was fortunate enough to work for a company that embraced the Sen Delaney approach to culture change. And as I went through that, your model provided lots of opportunities for us to get involved, commit, be responsible for assuring the success of the improvements we wanted to make. Could you explain that model a little bit and why each element is so important?
Sure. It's a model we developed many years ago back then and have refined since. And the first step in that model is diagnostics. That is really understand what culture you have and what you want. In the case of the organization you were with, they were in the insurance industry, and that industry was going through major change, and they were ultra-conservative and overly risk-averse, and they didn't collaborate enough across products. So part of our diagnostic was, in order to be successful in the changing industry they're in, what behaviors do they need to change? That holds true today. Every industry has changes, so we can define the specific behaviors they need to succeed at this moment in time. The second step, then, as I mentioned, is once you know that, you have to somehow unfreeze those habits. And that begins always with a CEO and senior team. It begins at the top because of the shadow phenomenon. And then a process which helps people have epiphanies around the behaviors they need to change and make commitments around those takes place. That's the unfreeze. You then have to reinforce. And so the systems of the organization, from compensation to communications to performance management, all have to be aligned with the definition of the culture you have, how you define the culture. Then you need to apply it to creating results. We have one client that was, gosh, near bankruptcy 2 years ago, just announced yesterday that they're the largest alternative energy producing company in the world, and their stock price is up 1,000% in the last 3 years. And they shaped a culture to really take on that industry. So that was their application. Other applications might be same-store sales improvement at Victoria's Secret. And so there is an application, and finally you need to measure to make sure you've done it. So it really begins with this gap analysis. What do you have? What do you want? And then a process to both unfreeze and then reinforce those behaviors. I think the most significant tool we've developed, Rebecca, since your work back then, really is focuses on this whole notion of getting people to operate at the top of their game. We all know there are times when we really are at our best, creative, collaborative, resilient. And so how do we do that? And a tool we've developed to help people with that is something we call the mood elevator. In fact, that's my latest book, Up the Mood Elevator. And if you think about it, each moment of every day we're on this mood elevator that goes all the way from depressed at the bottom to grateful at the top. In the middle is curiosity. And so if we can be, as David Novak, CEO of Yum! Brands, says, at curious and above, at resourceful, at innovative, at collaborative, we can really be effective as people and as organizations. And so helping organizations and people live life at their best to become my personal purpose as well as our organization's purpose.
Larry, I think I heard you just say a minute ago that you have to measure this to be sure you're making progress. How do you measure culture?
We have instruments, and we begin the process. We actually administer a corporate culture profile, and it measures the culture. There are six major dimensions through a series of 24 questions. Characteristics like, are people here accountable or do they blame one another? Are they collaborative or cooperative? Are they trusting or not trusting? So we measure those kinds of dimensions in the organization. Are they open to change or resistant to change? And so then we remeasure those things at 6 months and a year. And it's amazing to see this chart move from the red to the green as our clients get better. They also set up other individual measures. In a retail store, it might be, do our same store sales go up? Do our employee engagement scores go up? So there's a variety of things they can be measured because culture and its effects can be measured.
That's so exciting, Larry. And it brings me to a kind of a follow-up question, which is, of course, your shadow of the leader is such a major contribution to how we understand leadership and culture change. And now you're talking about the mood elevator and understanding how to really make this stuff work on day-to-day. So as you look back over all your decades now of working with so many different companies around the world, how would you say that your understanding has deepened? And maybe you've got some nuances, things that are going to help us be better leaders and better at changing our corporate culture.
Yes, there are actually two things. We do a fair amount of research with universities. Been doing research on a concept called thriving. What creates a thriving human being, a really self-sustaining, renewing, healthy, high-performing person or organization? We found there are three dimensions to that that we've added to our work. And one of the most powerful really is the notion of purpose. When organizations and people are fueled by a higher purpose, they tend to always do better. So I work in helping each organization really define what's its reason for existence. Why does it deserve to be here? And how do you connect employees to that purpose? So it's interesting. We did the work with CVS Caremark on purpose. And as a result of that work, they decided to stop selling tobacco products, which is a $2 billion business for them. Now they're doing really well as an organization because people respect they did that. But that was the power of purpose in that organization. Another dimension that's critical is learning mindset. Everybody needs agility today and needs to be more agile and innovative. And yet we tend to have a fixed mindset. So how do you really create a more innovative, agile organization? And then the third pillar of thriving is one we've worked on for years, and that's called vitality. And in essence, that's really being able to live life and lead and manage up the mood elevator, not down.
Larry, you talked about purpose, and there are many, many thought leaders such as yourself that have been talking about the importance of that for a long, long time. Yet, it seems to me there's still way, way too many organizations struggling with that and not really having their grasp on what the organization's purpose is. Why does that still remain a struggle for a lot of organizations? And what's your best counsel on how someone could begin to really understand that and find that deep in the organization's soul?
That's a very thoughtful question in a sense. It's interesting. I gave a talk at Harvard last year on the power of culture and purpose to a group of CEOs, about 40 CEOs. And what I said to them was, it's clear that culture has reached a tipping point. In fact, Malcolm Gladwell, author of the book Tipping Point, was quoted in a blog recently as saying, "Culture, I've now become convinced that culture is the most important predictor of a company's future." But what I said was, I see purpose about where culture was 10 years ago. That it's now starting to catch on. You're now starting to hear more about it. And I think that what's true is that most everybody can easily see that if they have an organization, a leader can see this, that is really resistant to change and not innovative and too slow, that's killing them. That's really obvious. And that's what we depict in our graphic we call the jaws of culture that chew up all your strategies. So the fact that research now shows that culture is more important than strategy to success has been proven. We're just now getting the data and getting a handle on the power of purpose. And I think it will be where culture is in a number of years, but right now it's not quite there.
So Larry, how? I guess the question I'm having is, how do you get those leaders to change? Yes, they see results. They know they've got to change. They may even want to change. But how do they actually get the message and change? You mentioned the CVS and no longer selling tobacco products.
Well,
How did that come about?
Well, it's interesting. I'll give you an even closer example. In order to better fulfill our purpose around the world, we became part of Heidrick & Struggles, the global, best known executive search firm. And, but part of that arrangement was that they would take part in our process. And so we did some diagnostics and concluded that they would be served by having an even clearer purpose. So we had a two-day offsite that included the CEO, Tracy Walstoncroft of Heidrick, a great guy. And he got really excited about the notion of purpose. And so Heidrick now really has a purpose, and that is to help our clients change the world one leadership team at a time. And boy, is that resonating throughout the organization. But he had that insight. We did some work on purpose. We got some interesting videos on purpose. We talked about why purpose is so powerful. And we then did some reflecting and journaling and some guided imagery around it, and out of it popped this wonderful purpose. That's the kind of work we do with organizations to find those things.
Larry, I'm thinking about your comments on having this learning mindset, and you talked about curiosity earlier. That's an important rung on the mood elevator. I have done a lot of conversations, not only on this show, but on throughout my radio network, about the importance of curiosity in terms of facilitating an innovative culture. That's a scary thing, I think, for maybe a command and control corporation. They may say, geez, I don't really want my people to be curious, because then they may discover things that I don't want them to discover. But isn't that really the secret to this thing really, really working? I mean, obviously, curiosity in alignment with the organizational purpose is where I think really the magic happens, yeah?
Yes, I think that the essence of that is that all of our behaviors are driven by underlying beliefs. We do a lot of work in the Midwest, and the problem there is what's called Midwest polite, called Minnesota nice. The underlying belief there is our mothers told us, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. So the other beliefs we have is that as a leader, I'm supposed to have the answers, or I'm not supposed to be wrong, or I'm supposed to know things. And so the more we think we already know, the less willing we are to other possibilities. And the essence of a growth mindset is this curiosity. When someone says something, not to immediately say, well, no, here's why that doesn't work, to say, well, tell me more. And that's why curiosity is so powerful. And so we do some interesting things in our offsites with leaders that where we show them something and ask them a question, and they're absolutely sure they'll write. They're right. We had one CFO willing to bet $10,000 they were right, and they were wrong. It's set up that way. And all of a sudden they go, oh my God, maybe I shouldn't be so fixed in my ways. And that's what a fixed mindset is. I tend to try to show I'm smart by knowing things as opposed to being willing to be in the unknown.
All right. Well, Larry, I hate to say it, but we're running low on time. This has been a fascinating conversation. Before we let you go, how can people get in touch with you, learn more about Send Delaney, and get their hands on all your best-selling books?
Well, all you have to do is go to sendelaney, sendelaney.com, and find it there, or you can Google me at Larry Send, and you'll find the book and other things there.
Dr. Larry Send, the chairman of Send Delaney. Larry, it was great to have you. Thanks for carving out some time and joining us.
Thank you.
Rebecca, what a great conversation.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And Larry, thank you so much. Thank you so much. You know, I've been a fan of yours for years, so it was great to have you on the show.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for thinking of me. You know, when I was talking about it, we did some interesting work ourselves, talk about purpose. You had that question, Todd. And every single employee, we have 150 at Send Delaney, has been through a 3-day process in groups of 10 to develop their own personal purpose and see how that's aligned with our company purpose. So if you walk in our office and ask Liddell at our switchboard what her purpose is, she'll tell you. If you go in our mailroom and ask Jeremy, he'll tell you, or anybody else. So as part of that process, I worked on my own personal purpose. And it really is to provide understanding and inspiration for people to live life at their best, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. And so that's really what I'm about at this point in my life. And so one of my commitments when I did that purpose was to write a book. And that book was Up the Mood Elevator, because that contains a lot of my beliefs about health and mental health and physical health and purpose and things like that. And so it's purpose tends to inspire a person. It also tends to create curiosity, because you can't really fulfill a purpose unless you're learning and growing. And so it's an interesting cycle in this thriving cycle once you get on it.
All right. Dr. Larry Send, again, the chairman of Send Delaney, thanks for joining us. All right. Well, that wraps this episode. On behalf of our guest, Dr. Larry Send, my co-host, Rebecca Staten-Reinstein, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you soon on Long Shadow Leadership.